welcome, Red Eyes members. Thank you very much for joining us here in the member section. We are talking with Lloyd Pye about the Starchild Skull project, and we're having a very interesting discussion about some of the new things that have come to light. We're talking about the DNA research and what is needed, basically, to open up this whole area that we've been talking about. And there's a few things here that we want to go into here in the second segment. Among other things, I want to ask Lloyd here a little bit later about some of the, basically the location the skull has been found in, some of the kind of mythological connections as well, and see what Lloyd has to say about that. But there's one thing that I've been reading about in your ebook here as well, Lloyd, which has to do with the different, genetic groups and so forth, called haplogroups. And there was one, specifically, this skull belonged to haplogroup C, if I remember correctly. Maybe just tell us about that. Does that give away any clues at all to the origins, or what does that tell us?
Well, all it tells us really is that the mother of the star child, the woman, the human woman that brought it to term in her body, but to call it her mother, to call it its mother is not to say that there was a sexual union and she was a mother in the normal sense. She could have easily been, like an in vitro mother, like a surrogate mother, where you take the mixed genome of two parents and put it in an egg of another woman who will carry it to term. And they're doing that now with mice and rabbits to show that it can be done. And what you do is you take the nucleus formed by the chromosomes of one set of parents, a male and a female, but for some reason the female can't carry a child to term. You take the egg of another woman, you pull out her DNA from the middle of the egg, you put in the DNA of the two other parents, and she brings that baby to term, but it's her mitochondrial DNA because it's her cytoplasm surrounding the DNA of the other two parents. And so you've got a three-parent offspring, and the star child could be something like that. So, keep in mind, I don't think that the star child is necessary, well, at all, is a product of a sexual union. I think it's much more likely that it is the product of genetic engineering, and genetic engineering probably of that kind, simply because the star child's physiology is so different, so incredibly different from a human being. It's going to prove to be mostly like its father, and I think its father was probably a gray alien because it physiologically looks so much like a gray alien.
Hmm. So you mentioned it probably not through sexual intercourse, as some of the myths are telling us that from the Bible and whatnot. Do you think that that is just a story then that the people at the time told to be able to describe what they were witnessing, probably in a large scale, and what seems to be in different places around the world as well?
I don't, people ask me that all the time, and my answer always is this. The stories that are told in the Bible, I think, are intercourse with beings that are very much like human beings, the beings that we were modeled after. In other words, I think that human beings are genetically engineered creatures, exactly the way the star child was a genetically engineered creature. But I think that we are the product of two beings. We are a genetic combination of two beings that are different than the two beings that made up the star child. I think that what makes up the star child is one part is human being and one part is gray. This is what I think now based on everything that I know, leaving open the possibility that it may be proved otherwise, that it's something else. But this is what it looks like based on everything I know. Whereas we, human beings, I think, are the product of a combination of an alien that looks very much like us. And that's why we are so physiologically different from the being that we supposedly spring from, which is a primate here on Earth. I think primates are the natural species here on Earth, and we're not. So the same process that produced us about 200,000 years ago, which was take a little bit of the genes of the creatures, quote, creatures of Earth, which I think probably were Neanderthals, and insert in those eggs DNA that is mostly from another being, you produce us. And then later, you take us, an egg from one of us, and you put something in that from another being that's mostly something else, and I think it was a gray, and you get the star child. This is how I see it.
How about the modern stories and abduction accounts that we hear about human-alien hybrids? David Jacobs, among many others, are talking about this. Is this something that you follow with interest as well and keep one eye on?
Absolutely. Right, exactly. If you look in the ebook, you see the example that we have there of that, or the book itself, you can read a little more of the background of the story in the Star Child book. But the ebook is sufficient where you can see the example of Josie Galante and her son and the drawing that she made and how much it resembles the Star Child skull when you overlay the Star Child skull in the head of the little boy that she drew. I follow that. Yes, I've had probably a dozen women come to me over the dozen years almost that I've been doing it, about one a year. And I mean, they don't just say in an email, this happened to me. They hunt me down at some conference somewhere, and they will tell me, face to face their story. And it's always very powerful and very emotional. And I'm convinced that it's an ongoing process around the world. And if they're doing it now, they were doing it, they could have been doing it 900 years ago or 200,000 years ago or who knows how long ago. Something's going on here that is so much bigger than any of us. And I think this is what science doesn't want to recognize. This is what government doesn't want to recognize. They don't want it acknowledged that there is something, a much higher power, and not in the religious sense, but a real physically higher power out there that's sort of overseeing life on Earth and is overseeing the creation of certain aspects of life on Earth, if not all of life on Earth.
Yes. And do you think that I've heard ideas about even the fact that we are being changed slowly and that this human alien hybrid is kind of an attempt to bridge the different species to create, well, just as the word implies, this hybrid. And if that is the case, if that is what is going on, have you thought about any of the reasons for that? What would be the interest from the part of the Greys to do that?
Well, The improving us, I think, is a good idea. I think we are a real misfit on this planet. I don't think that we were created as well as we could have been initially, that we were just basically thrown together. We're a poor fit for this planet. And we're taking care of it very badly. I mean, we're the kind of animal that messes in its own nest, if you know what I mean. So we need improvement in a number of areas. We are a very flawed species, not just physiologically, emotionally, psychologically. We're flawed. And so we could use some improvement. And if that's what they're doing, if they're just trying to improve us and make us better, I'm all for that. We need it. I think it's obvious to anyone that we need it. But I don't know for sure that that's exactly what's happening. I think in the cases like we were talking about Josie Galante and the others, where they're creating hybrids, I don't think those hybrids are meant necessarily for planet Earth. I think they're being created and engineered to take somewhere else. Now, the question is, why would they not make those beings able to reproduce themselves? They made us able to reproduce ourselves. And if you're going to go to the trouble to create a new species and put it on a planet somewhere, why not make it able to reproduce itself? For whatever reason, that doesn't seem to have happened with these hybrids that they're creating with humans and grays or whatever, because they seem to keep having to make more and more and more and more of them. So I don't really understand it, but I think that's what it is. They are being taken to some other planet where they are physiologically better adapted in the way that they are, however that is, with some parts of the genes of a human being. Somehow, some of our genes are needed for them to function on that planet wherever they're going, because they seem to make a lot of them, and they don't seem to be living among us because they're physically so. Every woman who sees one that they tell her is her child, it would stand out in a crowd like a sore thumb. So they're not putting them into the population. They're not putting those hybrids into the population here. They're taking them somewhere else, but they keep making them. So that's all. Logic just tells me there's another planet out there that they're seeding, but they're not seeding them with beings that can reproduce themselves. They're seeding them with beings that have, like mules, for example. This is standard typical hybridization, mules. You know, a horse and a donkey makes a mule, and a mule can't reproduce itself. So basically the hybrids that are being produced in that way, I think, are the equivalent, the genetic equivalent of sterile mules. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely. And do you think then that this case kind of connects with the accounts we hear about taking of semen and eggs and so forth?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't genetically engineer without taking samples of eggs and semen. And when these people talk about when humans talk about their experience on board craft, and the women talk about the needles being put into their navels, that's extracting eggs. That's how we extract eggs. When the men talk about the anal probe, which everybody laughs about and makes such fun of, and the comedians make such fun of and all that, which is why men tend not to report their abduction experiences, because they know they're going to be ridiculed relative to the anal probe. But nonetheless, if you're going after sperm in a prostate, that is where to go for it. You know, you're right through the rectum is the best way to go, straight directly into it. So it all makes sense. It's just a little bit uncomfortable to talk about, and therefore unfortunate that people are going to make such fun of it. But if it could be taken seriously, it all makes sense.
And what about the motives of whoever now it is that's doing that? You're speculating, I guess, in one way that it might be potentially the Grays and so forth. I mean, to me, in one way, it does go against, well, in quote here, nature and the way we think that things are being handled, so to speak, and it's very violating, obviously. Do you think about this at all, and like wonder if it's right to do this, you know?
Well, it's no different, really, if you think about it, Henrik, than what goes on, what we do with animals. I mean, what's the difference? We take animals, we band them, we test them, we do all sorts of things to them. And nobody gets in an uproar about it. It's not, you know, nobody says it's immoral or anything like that. And I think in the grand scheme of things that we're like animals to them. And so, you know, it, from our standpoint, you can say that, well, okay, it's immoral, but, not necessarily. If there is a planet out there that needs bodies, that needs beings, that needs population, and they can't get it any other way, I mean, really, what does it hurt to come here and collect some eggs and some sperm if that's what they need, as long as they're not really hurting anybody, as long as they're not, you know, leaving our bodies mutilated like cattle, you know, as long as they're not doing that, as long as they're putting us back in our beds and just leaving us with a kind of a vaguely bad memory, maybe, I don't think they're seeing that as a really immoral thing to do if there is a higher purpose. Now, for the person to whom it's done, and I know if it was done to me, I would not feel good about it.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
I would feel that it was basically immoral. But if you look at the larger picture of why they're doing it, why are they going to so much trouble? Why do it? There has to be a good reason. I don't think they would do it unless it was a good reason. It's certainly not something they would just do on a whim. There has to be a purpose. And it has to be something, I think, that if we could know what it is, we might have people lining up and volunteering to be the ones to give up the eggs and the sperm. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. If they could afford to reveal themselves and say, hey, look, this is what we need. We need some eggs. We need some sperm. We're making these beings. They're going on this planet. This planet is dying. They need new people. They can't reproduce themselves. This is what, you know. I would sign up for that, and I think a lot of people would if it was put to us in that way. But they can't put it to us because we don't acknowledge that they exist yet. Hopefully the Star Child will change some of that worldview so that the beings that are out there that might want to reveal themselves to us if they thought we could handle it maybe then they will. If we get to the point where, let's just say, the star child is proven out to be the way I think that it will, and we have to start facing the issue of the reality of alien existence, and not just facing it, but accepting it, then it could be that within a year or 2 years or 5 years, they'll say, okay, these people are now ready for us. And they'll land on the White House lawn and they'll say, okay, here we are. Let's talk. Let's get together. Let's see about you taking your place at the, your seat at the Galactic Roundtable, et cetera, et cetera. All that can happen. But it needs a defining event. It needs something to spin us all in another direction. And I think that's what the Star Child could be.
What about the possibility that people here on Earth have knowledge about this alien program and that it actually is an agreement, maybe technology in exchange for genetic material, and this is one of the reasons why they don't want it to be known, so to speak, because if the word would get out on this, that this program is going on, people would demand a stop to it, so they try to keep the lid on all of these things at once, so to speak. Well, what do you think about that?
I think that that's very likely. I think that that has a real good chance of being true. I don't know that it is. I don't have the evidence that it is, but it could easily be true that in exchange for advanced technology, our leaders have said, okay, you can do what you want to, you know, with our people, just don't kill everybody. Don't do what they do with the cattle. With the cattle, yeah, okay, you can kill them. Do whatever you want. Nobody cares. We've got plenty of them, and you know, we eat them. But don't do that to our people. So I think maybe that's a quite possibly a deal that has been struck. But again, I think if the aliens were to come out and say, okay, we're here. We're not here to hurt you. This is what we need. We're doing a good thing. And if they could show that it was, I think they'd have all the volunteers they need. It isn't that hard a procedure. But the government, this is one of the reasons probably that the government does not want this out into the open. It's because they're making a lot of money on the technology. They're making a lot of, and it gives them a lot of power to have technology that other countries don't have. So it's always power, money, power, money, power, money. And how you weigh that off. So I don't really know for a fact that that's going on, but it would certainly explain the government's resistance to having this information, you know, the reality of UFOs and the reality of aliens become public. It's why they keep a lid on it and have kept the lid on it so tight for as long as there was the first glimmer of it being reality in the time of Roswell.
So what about the Star Child skull? Is the skull something that you think might have been intentionally left behind, or do you think that something else happened that resulted in the fact that this wasn't taken care of, so to speak, this child?
Right. I think this one got away. I don't think it was intentional at all. I think this one got away somehow from their program. See, a woman who died just last year, as a matter of fact, named Paula Gunn Allen, she was a professor at UCLA, a professor emeritus, and you can read about her. She's very well known, very well written and published. And when she heard about the Star Child, she was a Native American, and she had done most of her research, had been into the history and legends and myths of the American Indians. And she said, this has got to be one of the star beings. And I said, well, what are the star beings? And she said, these are beings that the legends of tribes all over the Americas and into South America as well have of beings from the stars, star beings, coming down in ships and picking villages, isolated villages. This is, again, hundreds of years ago. And finding a woman in the village, generally a woman who was barren, but it could be a woman without a husband or whatever, and she would be made pregnant with a star being. And the beings from the stars would say to the village, now, this is going to be a very special individual, and you're all responsible for raising it up to the age of 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, and then we're going to come back and get it. And it better be here when we come back. And they would do that. And so then the beings would come back and get the being, take it away, and that would be it. Something went wrong. This is what I suspect. Something went wrong with the Star Child. got sick, it died, whatever, and instead of wanting the whole village to pay for it, this woman went and she took it away from out in the middle of nowhere and took it into the mine tunnel and committed suicide. I mean, there's nothing other than that she buried it in that grave that we talked about earlier, and then she stuck the hand out, wrapped it around her own arm, and killed herself. So that's how her body was found laying beside it. She took poison. She slit her wrist. We don't know what happened, but she did something to kill herself. She was maybe protecting the whole village or doing the best that she could, or maybe the village just, they drew a lot, and they said, whoever gets the, you know, the short stick, you got to bury the body and take the hit for us. However, it happened. And then it might be in a mine that is like lead, maybe it's a lead mine or something, it's something that the tracking mechanism of the beings, the star beings, couldn't follow, couldn't find the body. See what I mean?
Yes.
That might be an explanation. But somehow the Star Child got away because there doesn't seem to be anything else like it ever found on Earth. So that's just my guess. I'm just spitballing here. But again, based on 10 years of looking at it, this is my best guess at this time. The Star Child just was just an accident that got away.
And do you think there could be more of these around, but we simply haven't found them yet?
It could easily be. I mean, it's a miracle upon miracle upon miracle that we have it now. I mean, really.
Yeah.
The odds on that little girl finding it in 1930, the odds on her managing to keep the skull, the odds on her keeping it for 60-something years in a cardboard box in her garage, the odds on her handing it to a couple who then handed it to a couple who might have an indication that it's something other than, you know, the second couple thought it was a deformity, just like the first couple thought. And, I mean, what are the odds on it falling into the hands of Melanie Young, who knew that it wasn't a normal kind of deformity and who also knew that it might be a gray? Falling into my hands. I mean, that's the equivalent of that shepherd finding the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, it's just miracle after miracle after miracle. And here we are, and I've somehow managed to keep it going for 10 years. I mean, I was absolutely on the verge of giving it up at the end of 2002. I mean, I was had gone in the hole so bad on this, about $50,000 in the hole. I had to ultimately declare bankruptcy because of it. I mean, and I've still managed to hang on and scrape my way through and get to here. And now we're going to do it. So, again, miracle, miracle, miracle. There could be others out there, but it's going to take a real stroke of luck, I think, for it to come out. Now, that said, the Star Child has proven to be real. We could have six or seven or eight of them pop up out of the bone rooms of museums around the world and say, well, gee, we just thought it was some kind of deformity and we just put it away over here. But now that you've had this one, maybe this one's like it, you know, that could easily be. There could be several stuck away in museums somewhere that people don't talk about because they know it's going to stir up a lot of criticism if they do.
Do you think we could learn something about them, in quotes here, if we indeed get a full genetic mapping of the genome here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we're going to get a good, clear glimpse of what their genome, or at least what the genome of one species of alien is all about. And that's going to be the father, whoever and whatever it was, of the Star Child. I'm confident that was an alien. And we're going to be able to see. Now, a lot of people say, oh, well, Lloyd, this is ridiculous because no other species from another planet, from another world, from another solar system is going to be like ours because ours developed uniquely here. Well, that's if you buy into the Darwinian idea that life spontaneously formed itself in a little pool of the elements here on this Earth. But that's ridiculous because there are certain parts of life like beryllium. Beryllium is so small, as such a small amount of life of the chemistry of this Earth. There are things about life that make it clear it didn't start here. Just the fact alone that the first life, the prokaryotic bacteria, the two types of it appeared overnight together, and they're two completely different types. shows very clearly life didn't spontaneously generate here. It was brought here, put here. And what it did was it transformed whatever the planet was like in the beginning. By their life processes, they put oxygen into the atmosphere. So I think life is ubiquitous. I think life as we know it is ubiquitous everywhere. The gene code, the gene pool as we know it, the genetics, the base pairs and all that, that whole system of DNA, I think that's everywhere, everything. It's all the same. I don't think that it regenerates itself spontaneously in every place. I think we are part of a seeding program that goes on around the universe. I think it's all basically the same. To me, the bar scene in Star Wars is probably pretty much the way it is. Everything's sort of kind of alike, but different in its own unique ways. When you look at the genome, and you look at all of the, quote, junk DNA in there, and you realize that we operate on about 3% of our genome. Everything else is just there for some reason no one understands. There is so much flexibility built into that. There is so much room to move, so much room to do other things that you could make, 10 billion species based on just the flexibility of the genome as it is in our bodies. And I think that's how it really works. There's no spontaneous generation of life here and all. And the people that say that, well, aliens are going to be so much different, there's no way that they could mix with humans, that's just absurd. That's total ignorance talking. Somebody that just doesn't have any sense of what it's really like.
Hmm. And, regarding junk DNA and that kind of area, so to speak, do you think that we have DNA in us that is dormant in some way, undeveloped, that we could actually, because again, you've talked about this idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You talked about improvement
absolutely.
Before. Can we improve ourselves
absolutely.
In one way, so to speak?
Absolutely. What I think is going to be one of the biggest things that we're going to do within the next, say, 100 years? Mark this one down. Right now, I don't care what anybody tells you, we do not use the majority of our brains. We do not use, the old thing about 10%, and they've done brain scans, and they see that every part of our brain actually works at different times. And so they say that old thing about the 10% of our brains is not true. It is true. They're trying to downplay that now. But it is true. I don't know if it's 10%, but we use a very small portion of our brains. And I'll tell you why it's obvious. It's the same reason that it was back then. Savants have the ability to do, we all know, Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man and all. We know what they can do with math, with music, with spatial relationships. They have these incredible gifts. All of that is in our heads too. We don't have human brains. We have the brains of the creatures that made us. But when they made us, for whatever reason, I think it's because they were creating us as slaves and servants while they were here, but for whatever reason, they made us stupid compared to them. Now, to us, we're brilliant. We're just the apotheosis of everything good. But really, compared to those that created us, we are dumb, dumb, dumb. And they made us dumb. They did that. They put a kind of a blockage in our brain to let us use only a small portion of what's there in our normal daily lives because they only wanted something that could take orders, go off and do a job and come back and, use some originality while doing the job and come back and say, okay, we've done this job. What do you want us to do next? That's how I think we were made by those who created us. And so in the future, we are going to be able to drop that wall, that curtain, that partition, whatever it is, that when savants have an injury to the normal part of their brain, and it gives them a little tear through the curtain, a little light through that curtain into the hidden part of the brain. And they can see what we, normal people, can't see. They can get in there and do what we can't do. But because there are over 100 of them on record now and counting, and they all have these various incredible capacities, that tells me, and it should tell anybody, that we all carry that fantastic ability, all of that fantastic ability in our own brains. As you and I sit here talking right now, if that partition could be dropped, you and I would have brains of incredible capacity. Mm. But it isn't going to happen in our lifetime. But in the future, we're going to figure out the genetic keys that cause that curtain to be dropped. And we're going to lift that curtain, and we will produce new beings that will intellectually, not physically, we've got to make some physical changes as well, but intellectually be the equivalent of those that created us. This is what I believe.
And that is really interesting. And in one way, do you think that there could be resistance to that on multiple levels, both from the point of view of ET here, but also of people on the planet? Because again, we know that there's tremendous genetic research done in the last few years, and there might be information out there which you have access to in regards to that they've discovered the potential of the human being, and they don't want that to be known, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, always there's going to be, I don't know what you call them in Sweden, but here in the States we call them the blue noses. Those are the fundamentalist Christians that want everything done exactly according to the Bible and all that. And they resist any change. That's why during the Bush years, they wouldn't allow stem cell research when it was so obvious that that's going to help millions of people to deal with really terminal illnesses. But also, too, you have the people with money who have these illnesses. You know, they're pressing to have things fixed so that they can get healed or their children can be healed. Now, let's look 5, 10, 15, 20 years into the future, and somebody's out there saying, hey, look, I can create a brain and a child that is so incredible it'll make this child a Superman on Earth. Now, do you think there's a billionaire that out there that might not be willing to fund that to create their children and make them the first of the new geniuses? Somebody will do it. Yeah. Somebody will do it. Forget the blue noses. The blue noses are going to become irrelevant when you have the power to create super beings, because every parent with the money is going to want it to be their kids. And so that'll happen. Just the same way that you're having, over time, enough pressure applied to get stem cell research underway, because it's so clear it's going to produce so many benefits for the human race as a whole.
And if we talk a little bit more about the issue of resistance to this information, maybe you can talk a little bit more about how you have been discovering that people are working in one way against you. If we do go to an extreme of this, have someone ever tried to actually take the skull or steal material from you in order to prevent you from going ahead?
No, they've never done that, Henry. But what we have is clear evidence now, I think, that there's pressure being applied to slow me down in what I'm trying to do. And here's what I base it on. Last year at about this time, right now, there was a deal underway with the BBC to pay for the testing and produce a documentary around it. Everything that I need right now was looking like it was going to start and initiate last year at this time, so that there would have been a documentary film out and it would all be done right now. But the BBC, you know, the economic collapse occurred and the BBC eventually bowed out. Then it was taken by the producer, an award-winning documentary producer, by the way, in England, Matt Richards. And it was taken to various other networks, Discovery Channel in America, one in Germany, one in France, another one in England. And they would all get interested in it and say, oh, yeah, this looks really good. And then suddenly, no, it's too expensive, we can't do it. Well, you know, yes, there's an economic collapse, but not at that level. They still, it's not a lot of money. It's the salary of, you know, a second level director or something. You know, you see what I mean? It's not like the anchors that get millions of dollars for a year's work and all. You know,
right. I mean, they're always looking for the next scoop, some many of these shows, right? And they want to have the next big thing, and this would be one of them. You know?
But they're also beholden to the powers that be.
Yes.
And I think that when the powers that be pick up the phone and say, we don't want this put out, drop it, they drop it. Now, I was still blaming the economy, because that's what they would tell me. They'd say, no, it's just really too expensive. We're firing people left and right. We can't justify it to our employees that we've had to fire, song and dance. And I accepted it. I thought, well, you know, it makes sense. But then in June, now listen to this. This is really astounding. in June, I was in England, and I was getting ready to give a series of three lectures there. And so, as you do, you put out a press release, and you let the local media know that you're in town, you're willing to talk, and, you know, if they're interested, you know, give you a ring. And so I was contacted by the Daily Mail. Now, the Daily Mail is the largest single newspaper in England. 3 million copies sold every day, and they assume that about 6 million people read it. This was a big deal. And the Daily Mail says, we're excited about this. We want to do a full two-page spread. It's exactly our kind of thing. We have a good writer to do it. He's a biochemist, a PhD biochemist, used to work for the chemical industry, and he's a journalist now, and you know, he'll be able to understand the science, and this will be great. We're excited. Let's do it. And I said, okay, but it has to be done by Wednesday the 24th, I think it was in June. It has to be because I'm giving a speech on Thursday and I'm giving a speech on Saturday, and I want it to come out to kind of help those speeches. Okay, no problem. We'll do it. We'll get it out, and it'll be on Wednesday. Do not worry. Okay, so we've got a deal. They turn it over to the writer, true enough, biochemist, great guy. He interviews me. He interviews the geneticists. He interviews the owners, Ray and Melanie. He interviews Ted Robinson, another doctor that did extensive, a craniofacial plastic surgeon from Canada who did a lot of work on it. They really went all out. The writer read the book. He didn't have the ebook at that time, but he read the book. He went on the website, and he looked at the films, the videos of me giving lectures about it. I mean, he really got it together. He in about a week, 10 days time, and then he wrote it. And the deadline was Tuesday afternoon, 2 o'clock, before the Wednesday it was going to be printed. He got it in, no problem. Everything's fine. We're all excited, and we get up Wednesday morning to see the paper, and it's not there. What happened? The writer doesn't know. They don't tell him. They just say a snag. We'll get to it. So we think it's the next day, Thursday. The next day, not in. What happened? The writer says, I don't know. They're not telling me. I don't understand. Well, I don't know. I think maybe they might have been telling him, and they told him, just don't tell us. Something happened. And then the Friday, the next day, Michael Jackson had died, and that just sort of took it all away for the next week, 10 days. But, you know, we've had from now until then, and they could have put it in. Somebody got to the Daily Mail. Now the Daily Mail is the equivalent of a scandal rag, really. They'll print anything. They don't care.
Yeah.
They're invulnerable. I mean, they will say, you know how those English papers are. They're into scandal. I mean, that's what they do. They stir the pot.
Yeah.
They want to have controversy. So what could be more controversial than this? It was right down their alley, and they were excited about it until the writer turned it in. And somebody at the top gave it to somebody else, whether in science or government or whatever, I don't know who, but somebody put what we call the quietus. Somebody put the quietus on it, and they spiked it. And it has stayed spiked. And to this day, me talking to you, I haven't heard a word from the Daily Mail people to explain what happened, why, anything. And according to the writer, neither is he. So it's just one of those things. Yeah, I know. It's a big deal. This is the first time I think I've ever actually really explained it in full anywhere. But that's what happened. And I've waited this long to see if that was going to change in any way, but it hasn't. I haven't seen the story ever. So I don't know that I ever will. But or I don't know that I'll ever see it in the form that it was going to be in. It may come out and it'll be all changed and different and be made to look stupid. But the idea was that a biochemist was going to be able to understand it, and he did. He did understand it. He was saying, well, this is amazing. This is just amazing. And so I think he wrote a story along those lines, and I don't think that was acceptable to somebody, where he was actually promoting the star child in a very positive way to 6 million people. I don't think they wanted that.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
And I haven't heard from anything or anybody since to do anything else along those lines. And so it's up to me now. It falls on my shoulders to somehow make this happen, and I can't do it alone. So that's why I'm asking you and your listeners and everybody that we can get in touch with from friend to friend to friend to let people know that this whole thing with the Star Child has turned serious. And if we don't mount a serious counterattack or counter campaign, we're going to get bottled up for, you know, however long. We have to fight back. They've clearly drawn a line in the sand. They're, you know, obviously aware of it, and they're going to do what they can to slow me down. And we just have to make sure that at every step we take, we're taking a sure step. And that's why with the testing, we have to film it. There's no other way to get it done. And there's enough people out there now doing the 454 testing, but there will be a lab that will want the money,
yeah,
just like there was in 203. So we're going to get somebody willing to do the test, but we have to make sure of two things. We have to make sure that we can defend every single step of the way, and by filming, by having a camera going on all the time, we'll know that the answer that we got is legitimate. So,
and do you think that
we're in good shape, but we just have to follow through?
That sounds good. And do you think that the filming of this will be okay, or is there any kind of, some kind of trade secret in regards to how to map the DNA or something like that?
No, I've already talked to the 454 people, and they say that there's been enough filming of the Neanderthal process that they're comfortable with it. It's like, we don't have anything to hide. We do what we do, and it's just really machines running 24/7.
Yeah.
And it's a function of what you put into those machines is a function of what comes out of those machines. And so we just have to show that it's, the cutting of the bone, the cleaning of the bone, the dissolving of the bone. And by the way, I should mention, I didn't mention this in the first hour, but something of interest relative to the Star Child bone. In the first hour, we talked about how it's more like tooth enamel, and it has those fibers woven through it, none of which are human.
Mm-hmm.
When the bone was dissolved to reduce it down to a liquid state where you could extract the DNA, normally you put it in a substance called EDTA, and EDTA will dissolve human bone in about a week. It'll dissolve it down to nothing. EDTA may have no effect at all on the Star Child in 6 months. I mean, it didn't even impact it. They had to use a completely different substance on the Star Child bone called Tween 20, which is a very powerful detergent that really breaks things down. And so right there, you have another of the many indications that the Star Child is not human. But, when it's done, the answer will be clear. The 454 machines will spit out the answer, and then it'll just be a matter of comparing the two, which is done, mostly by computers. And the answers will be what the answers will be. And that's why I said in the first hour that DNA is the equivalent of math. It is as precise as math. It is math turned into biology. So it will say what it will say. And if it's, if it's the real deal, it'll say it every time an experiment is done of that nature. It'll say the same thing every time. That's what gives DNA its power. And that's why we're going to win it.
One would think that even military researchers would be interested in something like this if we take into account the possibility of their scientific endeavors going into genetic research, the potential creating of super soldiers. Again, you just mentioned that the bone, to have a lighter but yet stronger bone, would be things that they would be interested in.
Absolutely, they would. But I mean, let's not even worry about military applications. How about this? How about one of the genetic companies out there gets the bone and goes to work trying to figure out what makes it so hard, what makes it so durable, how to add that extra calcium and carbon and the things that give it more of the enamel strength, and just apply that to people of my generation. I am on the cutting edge of the baby boom. And so I'm coming into the age where my baby boomer group, we're going to be getting pretty frail. What would I give for some kind of a pill or a shot or something that would increase the durability of my bones? I'd give a lot. And so it's a multi-billion-dollar application right there. So you don't need the military. You just need private business. I don't see why one of those genetic companies hasn't jumped on this with both feet like a two-ton pig
right.
up to this point. But they haven't because, again, everybody's afraid to look stupid. Everybody's afraid to look like, in the eyes of their peers and in the eyes of their friends, that they take the UFO thing seriously. Mm. Oh, no, not me. I know that's a bunch of garbage. Oh, you know, everybody in science has to give off that impression that they're not going to fall for that kind of garbage. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm cool. I'm hip. I know. It's not true. You know, you have to make it so that it's okay for them to do that. It's okay for them to acknowledge it and to say, okay, I'd like to work with this. That's what my job is. That's what your job is. That's what the job of every listener is. We have to roll this skull up the hill and crest it so that it starts rolling down on its own momentum. Mm. And that will happen. And when it does, then scientists are free of the injunction against believing in UFOs and aliens, even if in private they do. Look, I've talked to many. Let me tell you, I've talked to many of them that in private will say to me, I'm right with you, man. I know exactly where you're coming from. I can see this, but I can't put my name on it or my career is, you know, goes over. And I understand that. It's true. They are vicious against people from their fraternity that step outside the lines. They will really hammer you. And the ones that I've gotten to speak and put their name on the line, I have enormous respect for them. Those people have major cojones. They are very brave people, and I salute all of them. But there hasn't been many relative to the number that I've actually talked to.
So it could be then in one regard that they simply don't understand the implications of this yet. Have you considered like discussing these things with them out of the angle that it could, as you say, lead to medical advances and not kind of touch upon the alien ET question at all, but this would be a way in, so to speak, to get the funding necessary to indeed analyze the DNA and then get a secondary kind of effect out of this, which would be that we have the potential mapping of an alien ET genomic code.
Henrik, I'm telling you, when I talk to them, it's consistently the same answer. Well, wait a minute. If this was true, I'd already know about it, wouldn't I? Wouldn't I already know about this if it was true? They automatically assume they lump me in, they lump the Star Child in with all the other hoaxes and frauds that are out there. And there are a lot of them. Let's face it, there are a lot of hoaxes and frauds in this field. And so we get tarred with that same brush every time. And they make the assumption that if it was legitimate, somebody else would already have proved it. Somebody else would already have put it out there. Somebody else would have let them know about it. And it just, you know, obviously isn't that way. Everything is geared to keep this information suppressed as long as possible. So, we're in the end game here. This has like been a 10-year chess game. Their move, my move, my move, their move, their move, my move, back and forth, right?
Yeah.
But now we're in the end game, and I've got the king surrounded, and it's going my way now. But I need help. I need help to finish it off, and that's what I'm in the process of gathering, and that's what I think we're all in the process of doing. Whether you help or not, whether you sit it out on the sidelines and just watch, it's okay, because eventually I'm going to get what I need to get it done, and we'll get it over with. It has to happen now.
All right, Lloyd, we need to let you go. We're really excited about this and hope that this will indeed pan out as planned. Again, get the ebook Starchild Skull Essentials from the website starchildproject.com and help Lloyd out in this endeavor. Also, check out the other sites, of course, lloydpye.com and iuniverse.com, and we'll have links up to Amazon, to some of the other material that Lloyd has put out book-wise and so forth. But with that, thank you very much for coming on the program again, Lloyd. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me on. This is really one of my favorite venues to be on. You do an absolute marvelous job with your websites and everything that you do. I mean, your website is just, it's terrific to have you guys out there fighting as sort of generals in the battle, and I don't think anyone would call you anything less than a general. You do a great job both of you, and just keep doing what you're doing. It's terrific.
All right, that's our program with Lloyd Pye. We have upcoming shows with Nick Pelling on the Voynich manuscripts. We have part two with Andrew D. Basiago. We have David Icke returning with us soon as well. And we hope to have Ellen Brown and David Jacobs on the program soon as well. Thank you so much for joining us in the member section. And my thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth. We'll be back before you know it. Take good care, and we will see you online.